Hi there, and welcome to this live call, Wednesday, the 29th of July, 2026. Now, there's not actually anybody else on this call, so I'm just going to present it as if you're going to listen to it on the audio replay or watch it on the video replay. So as ever, we're going to go through my contact details so I can help you. So we're coming up to the end of the very first year. So first of all, I want to say a huge thank you very much to everyone that has stayed within the membership. I hope you've got a lot of value out of it. The fact that you're still here would hopefully tell me that that's the case. Some exciting stuff to come throughout the next few months, at least anyway. And as ever, I want to hear from you guys about how I can make this membership better for you, to help you with your running. And, you know, because NeuroActive can help outside of running as well, then, you know, I'm very happy to help with anything to do with movement or anything to do with pain or niggles or things like that, even if it's not specifically in a running context. So I am here to help. You can email me, chris@runteach.com, or you can WhatsApp me on the number shown on the screen. Okay, so today I want to just run through a couple of quick updates, and then the main focus for today's call is on run types. That's the type of sessions, things like easy runs, tempo runs, threshold runs, all that kind of stuff, what they are and how they're going to help you with your running. Then ordinarily, of course, we would go for questions, but we'll cover that at the end. So a few updates straight up. First of all, for you, initially, just want to talk about annual memberships again. So annual memberships, they're going to renew in the next couple of days or in early August for most of you. I have sent an email out or I've spoken to you about it, so you'll know that they will automatically renew. If you don't want that to happen, you can contact me. We can change it to monthly if you like, or of course, if you don't want to continue with the membership, if you're not getting the value out of it, that's fine. I would have obviously prefer you to let me know so that we can try and create value for you. But ultimately, you know, I know if you're not running at the moment or if other things are changing, then, you know, there's no point you paying for something that you're not getting that value from. None of us want to be doing that, and that's absolutely fine. Now, the big update really is on the Neuro Engine, that 8-week plan. Now, we're at the point now where all the assessment modules have been completely rewritten. But as part of doing that, what became very apparent is the way that the scoring system was working is actually much, much closer to being an automated coaching system. So what I always wanted the Runner by Design membership to be is to take what I do in one-to-one coaching and bring that into the membership in a way that I could scale it. Normally what happens with that is you have to compromise a lot because you can't, you know, AI and, you know, code is very difficult to emulate how a human being looks at things, okay, because there's lots of nuances in there. But actually, as we're going through the development of the Neuro Engine, we've kind of discovered a way where that can happen really, really well. So instead of this being the interpretation layer, it's now a full-blown reasoning engine, okay? So what happens is you do the assessments, and that produces a bunch of scores, a bunch of numbers, okay? Those numbers then, along with some answers to some questions, goes into the reasoning engine. The reasoning engine then has several layers. And then what it's looking for is, depending on what your goals are, okay, so it's looking at where you are now and it's looking at that gap. And it's not just saying, okay, your visual system is the lowest performing system, let's do lots of visual work. It's actually saying your visual system is the lowest performing system, if that is the case, of course. But also some of these other things, you're creating too much tension, you're doing this, you're doing whatever, from the assessment videos and from your questions. And then it starts to build that 8-week plan. An initial 8-week plan, because this is the other change in it. It starts to build that plan based on a lot more intelligence of the interpretation of what needs to happen to fill that gap. Okay, and then you still assess every 2 weeks, but every second week assessment is just a check-in. And then it uses that check-in to tweak the plan a little bit. And then every fourth week, you do a bigger assessment check-in, and it uses that then to assess what your readiness is. So it's all based around a readiness score to move on and how close you are to your goal. So it's actually not just an 8-week plan now, it's just a continual plan. So we're kind of moving away from, oh, here's 8 weeks at a time, but saying this is what you need to do over the coming weeks to try and fill the gap, and this is what you need to do today. And then you give feedback on that session and then it goes away and updates it. So it's exactly the same as if you came into a one-to-one with me. You do the exercises. I can see what's going on. Obviously, the system is relying on you giving some of that feedback. But you give the feedback and the system then will change it or say, well, actually, you know what? You're not quite ready to move to a progression of this exercise. We need to stay with this one for another week. Okay, so it's really, really exciting. Really exciting. Development is going super well given the complexity of it. And I reckon it will be available the next month or so. I've been saying that for a little while, but it's all the assessment stuff is written. The hard part is written. Now it's about how I present that to you guys and how I make it work in that way. So all the intelligence, if you like, has been written behind the scenes. That's a really, really super exciting update. So yes, it can still be a pathway within the membership, but it basically becomes the coaching itself, and everything else there is around it to support it. And then I can create more content that can help you understand why you need to do certain things or help, you know, in other ways. So it just becomes what I really envisioned right at the very beginning. Okay, so by the way, if you have any questions about that specifically, then just contact me about it. Okay, really happy to answer any questions about that and how it may help you in a running context and also in an outside of running context. So today I really want to talk about types of runs. So what I want you to have a think about, if you're in the position to do so, and maybe you can write it down if you're watching this, what type of runs do you know about? Okay, if you think about what you've read, what you've seen, what other people have told you about the type of running. So you've got, obviously, your easy runs. I'll start you off with that. And then you've got some speed work. But how does that break down? What type of runs, you know, can you think of? And pause the video, or pause the audio, and just have a little think about that. Okay, so here is what I've come up with. So I've come up with a recovery run. Okay, that's the lowest intensity run. Then you have an easy run. And that recovery run might be a run walk as well, of course. You have an easy run. And we're going to talk about each of these. I'm going to talk about the benefits of them as well. Then we have our upper easy or steady run. Now, upper easy is actually a phrase that I coined. I hadn't heard it before. I kind of came up with it. And I think it's far more descriptive than a steady run. I never really understood what a steady run was, because you can have a steady run at 8 minute mile pace, you know, 5 minute kilometer pace, or you can have a steady run at 4 minute mile pace, which is six something minute mile pace. Okay, so a steady run doesn't have much about it, but upper easy is much more descriptive. That's saying, yeah, we're now running at the upper levels of our easy energy system. Okay, then we have our long run. And a long run, again, can be very easy. It can be medium. It can be upper easy. Okay. You have parts of it that are actually threshold or tempo. And then talking about tempo, we actually have our tempo run as our next level up. Tempo, again, is one of those things. When we talk about it, you'll see a little bit more. But it's one of those things that is a little bit loose in terms of a definition. I find that a really hard one to get a proper definition of. Threshold run, then we have our race pace run, our marathon run, then we have everyone's favorite, which is hills. And hills, of course, can be speed work, but they may also not be speed work. You know, you might have hills in as part of a long run. You might have different types of hills. You can use hills for different types of things. And then we have speed work, and speed work then can have lots of different categories underneath it. So again, what I want you to have a think about now is, what do each of these run types do for you? Okay, what do they do for you? What does an easy run do for you? What do hills do for you? Have a little think about that. Again, pause the video, pause the audio if you like. And then also have a think about when you would include them in your weekly volume or your monthly volume. How do you include some of these runs? What are some of the benefits that these runs are going to give you? Okay, so I hope you have had a little go at that. What I want to do, first of all, is just look at the types of benefits that all of these run types will give you. Okay, first of all, they all give you some form of energy system training. Okay, and we're going to look at that as the first thing we do. They all give you some form of neuromuscular training. Okay, working your nervous system with your muscular system in various different ways. They also will all give you various types of coordination training, autonomic nervous system regulation. Okay, and we're talking about the sympathetic nervous system. This is your fight or flight system. So when your heart rate increases, when your blood pressure increases, That's your sympathetic nervous system kicking in. But also you have the opposite of that, which is your parasympathetic nervous system. So you have rest and digest. Okay, and that's bringing everything down a little bit. And then we have your enteric nervous system. Okay, and that's all about managing your gut more directly. Okay, so it's that system there when you're at a really high effort or doing a really long run and you start to get cramps or you get some gastrointestinal type issues. That's your parasympathetic nervous system and your enteric nervous system going a little bit overdrive, particularly that enteric one. Okay. They all give you some form of systems training, visual, vestibular, proprioceptive, cerebellar. Okay. They give you systems training and they give you systems testing as well. Okay. And all of these runs, well, basically everything in life, but all of these runs, they all give you some form of predictive model training, updating, refinement, you know, creating new predictive priors that are then used in these run types as well. So here is a chart or a graphic, if you like, about the energy systems. Now, I find describing energy systems or displaying energy systems visually really difficult to do, and that's because they're not individual. They all come in at the same time. It just that happens that one is more dominant, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But let's just quickly go over the energy systems first, and then we'll look at how each of those run types fit into those energy systems. So the first energy system is your aerobic energy system. It's your largest energy system, and it's where you are right now, unless you happen to be on a spin bike or doing an interval session whilst you're listening to this. But you're in your aerobic system for the most of your running and actually for the majority of your racing as well. Now, this blue line here is showing effort and probably pace as well, but certainly effort increasing. And you can see that as effort increases, you go up through these energy systems. Now, we're going to skip this middle one for a second. I'm going to go straight up to this lactic system. Okay, so most, when you look at most energy systems diagrams or descriptions, they'll go aerobic, lactic, which we used to call once upon a time anaerobic. Okay, and then it goes up to alactic or what you would call phosphocreatine system. Okay, so your aerobic system is your base building system. That's where I say most of your training is going to be and most of your running is going to be or racing is going to be. Then we have your system. Now, you can, in theory, in your aerobic system, carry on forever. So this is kind of time down here. You can carry on forever if you are in your aerobic system. As you start to increase, though, okay, your effort level, things change slightly. So aerobic, you're using glucose, fat and oxygen to fuel. As you start to go past LT1, so most people only talk about LT2, lactate threshold. But actually it's an LT1. Some people do talk about LT3 as well, but we're just going to stick with LT1 and 2. Okay, not bother putting anything in the middle. So LT1, lactate threshold 1, this you're predominantly aerobic. Okay, now what happens as you go through to this lactic zone, this anaerobic zone, is you actually transition. Okay, you don't switch from one to the other. You transition. So the dominance changes from aerobic to anaerobic. OK, now the point that that's starting to change is LT1. That's the point where you start to accumulate some of those waste products in the cell a little bit more than you can clear them out. OK, so you're working at a rate where it's a little bit tougher for your body to get the blood flow around. So there's not as much oxygen and therefore the waste products of the cells aren't coming out. So you start to build up a little bit of lactate. OK, now, everyone's heard of lactic acid, and most of us know that actually lactic acid itself is just a biomarker. It exists for a fraction of a second. You have lactate and you have hydrogen ions and other substances that come together. You get lactic acid and then it kind of almost splits straight away. It's actually the hydrogen ions within the cells that cause that acidic environment. So this is the point. LT1 is the point where this is just starting to build up. OK, now as we go through what I'm calling the threshold zone, OK, so threshold of between LT1 and LT2, because once we get to LT2, that's lactate threshold 2, we're kind of getting to the point where that's the crossover point, what I call the point of no return, where now you have built up your intensity so much so that you now can no longer clear the waste products from the cells, and also you can no longer provide enough oxygen to the working muscles, to those cells, to be effective. So in the lactic zone, you're purely working off glucose. So you can't utilize fat. Well, there's some debate about that, but it's very, very minor because you're working too hard. Fat utilization is a little bit of a slower process, and you can't use oxygen. So you're purely on glucose, your stored form of glucose, that glycogen. Okay. So whilst in aerobic, you could, in theory, go on forever, a well-trained athlete may be able to stay in this zone, in this lactic zone, for perhaps 3 minutes. We might only get a couple of minutes out of that. And you can think about that as, you know, when you go hairing off at the start of park run or your race, and you go straight through the aerobic zone, straight into the lactic zone, you kind of maybe get through half of the first kilometer before you start to nosedive back down again. Okay. And that's because the buildup of in that zone is too much, and you have to come down to start clearing it out. Okay. Now LT2, coincidentally, well, it's not necessarily coincidentally, but matches up with VO2 max, coincidentally, just because there are other markers there. But VO2 max is the point where it's the maximum amount of oxygen you can take at the highest working intensity. So the highest working intensity where you can still get some oxygen to it. So it's maybe slightly below, but basically above that, you can't get much, or if any, oxygen to the working muscles. Why you don't use it in that energy system. Okay. The alactic system, what's called phosphocreatine system, that's your high end. It uses phosphocreatine as a fuel, doesn't use glucose, doesn't use fat, doesn't use oxygen, uses phosphocreatine. So you get a massive burst of energy, but it only lasts a couple of seconds. Well-trained athletes might get 10 seconds out of it, but us mere mortals might only get 5-6 seconds out of it. Okay, so you can think of that if you go down to the track and you watch sprinters doing 50 meter, 60 meter, 100 meter sprints. That's the system they're training in. They then have, and we'll talk about this later, we'll talk about sprints and recovery, but they then will have, you know, a good 5-6 minutes recovery to allow all of these systems to reset and recharge. Otherwise, when they do their next sprint, they're no longer working up here because it hasn't recovered enough. They're working further down here, and that's not their goal. So when we're looking at run types, we've got to think about, what is the purpose of that run type? What do we want our energy system training to be? Therefore, we use a run type for it. So if you want to train up here in this alactic system, you have to have a lot of recovery because it's a maximum sprint. It's a maximum effort the whole time. If you want to train in the lactic system, this is more akin to things like 200s, 400s, 800s, maybe even, you're up to with maybe 3 or 4 minutes of work. Up here, staying up in here, it's 4 minutes. You probably wouldn't be, but 2 or 3 minutes, you'd be staying in that zone. But you have to recover enough to do it. Otherwise, all you're doing is you're working further down. So that kind of brings us then to this threshold transition zone, and this is really that part where you're going from aerobic to anaerobic. Okay, this is the transition zone. This is where an awful lot of us will spend our racing. So top of the aerobic zone into threshold. So we're still, most of this threshold zone is still predominantly aerobic. Okay, it's only when it gets to that point of LT2 where it switches. So this is still all mostly aerobic, but we're in that transition between the two. Most of your racing will be in this area there, upper aerobic threshold. It might feel like it's lactic, it might feel like it's alactic, but it isn't. Okay, very small amounts will be there. But we still need to train these zones, because when we look at these arrows at the side here, this was actually from a presentation that I did. It's actually, I think, in Runner by Design, one of the modules there as well. So what we're basically saying is, this is where the aerobic zone is now, and this is where the threshold zone is now. If you train appropriately, you use those different run types, we can pull those zones up by training in all of them. We widen the threshold zone, we pull up the aerobic zone. So now, instead of, you know, your sort of easy pace of, let's just say your easy pace was a 5 minute kilometer pace or a 6 minute kilometer pace, you can now improve that by another 30 seconds. So maybe it's a 5:30 minute kilometer pace instead of a 6 minute kilometer pace. So you're now going faster, but for the same amount of effort. And this is why we use run types for training. Okay. So let's see where those run types fit in. So first of all, you have your recovery run, really down at the bottom there. That's a really low intensity, low energy system based run. Then you have your easy run, and that could be a little bit higher even than that. And then we have our Upper Easy or Steady Run. And again, that may be a little bit higher as well, depending on how you run that Upper Easy run. We have our Long Run. And Long Run really could be, it'll always be above recovery, because it's not recovery if you're going out and doing 10 miles or, you know, 16K and above. Recovery runs tend to be, you know, 20 to 40 minutes, kind of maximum, really. So Long Run, but Long Run can be anywhere. You can have a very easy Long Run. You can have an Upper Easy Long Run. You could even have a tempo Long Run. OK, and people do 10 miles, 15 mile tempo runs. OK, or big long sections within a longer run. OK, so long runs can fit anywhere there. Tempo run. Again, we'll look at tempo run kind of individually, because tempo just means pace or speed. So again, that will normally fit upper end of aerobic. It can also go into a little bit of threshold as well. I think personally, there's quite a lot of crossover with tempo runs and threshold runs, because it depends on what you're training for. Your threshold run obviously is in the threshold zone, okay, but it might be upper aerobic, lower threshold, it might be mid threshold, upper threshold, it might even go slightly into this anaerobic zone as well, okay. Then we have all your speed work. Then all your speed work will be across mostly all the time threshold zone, anaerobic lactic zone, or your alactic phosphocreatine zone, okay. And even as a marathon runner, you still need to train in all of these zones. Okay. Even as an ultra runner, you still need to train in all of these zones. So if all you're doing is doing easy stuff and then doing sprints, you're missing a massive part of your volume. If all you're doing is drifting into upper easy runs all the time, and then maybe putting a little bit of effort into some of your speed works, so you maybe get a little bit of threshold, but that's about it. You're missing a large part of your training. The reason why I design the sessions I do when I coach people, whether that's coaching individually, whether that's when I write sessions for people like, you know, Vovid runners, then I'm writing those sessions to cover all of these energy systems, okay? Because that's super important to do. You can't just miss out. You can't just put things on a rotation, on a repeat, and have the same sessions if they're not covering all these bases, okay? Also, from a development perspective, your brain and your whole system likes variety. So if you're doing the same, if you're doing the same session every fourth week, you have to ask the question, is that actually novel enough for you to actually progress very well? OK, and everyone's slightly different on that one. But certainly you want to have to be able to split your runs across all of these things. Now, just on that as well, you might hear a lot about, you know, the ratio of easy runs to your weekly volume. This is often stated to be between 70 to 80% of your weekly volume. OK. I've always thought this to be too high for most recreational runners. Okay, and we'll have a look at the numbers. So let's just say you're a high volume recreational runner and you're running about 80 kilometers a week. That's 50 miles a week. Pretty high for most people. Even in my marathon training, I'm only up to about 70, 73 kilometers a week. I know some people like to learn a lot more on that, and that's fine. But if we look at that on that 70%, so the lower end of that weekly volume being easy runs, you'll work out that 56 kilometers of your weekly runs will be easy at, or 35 miles. That would be easy running. OK, doesn't leave you very much for every other type of run you have to do. So that easy running also includes any recovery runs. It does also include, I guess, the warm ups if you're doing speed work. But it only leaves you 24K or 15 miles a week for all your other types of running. OK. Now, that might just about work out if you're adding tempo work in there, you're doing two speed sessions a week, you've got a threshold run in there, you might, and maybe one of your speed sessions is actually threshold based. So you might just about, that might work for you on a 70%. OK, might just get away with it on that mileage. But a lot of people don't do that mileage. A lot of people are doing 30 miles a week or 25 miles a week, so 40 to 48 kilometers a week. Now we look at that 70% and we're saying that 21 miles of that 30 is easy running. So 33 and a half kilometers of your 48 is easy running. That only leaves you with 14 and a bit kilometers, 14 and a half kilometers or 9 miles for every other type of run that you do. Well, if you're doing any type of, you know, you could do a speed session where you're doing 5 times 5 minutes. And let's just say you're covering a kilometer in that. Well, that's 5 kilometers that was already done just in that one session. It doesn't leave any room for any other sprint work or anything else. So the ratios maybe don't work out quite as well as I think they could do. So I would be looking at sort of 50 to 60%. If you're a low volume runner, I think that this ratio needs to change. Okay, so you need to look at the quality of the running instead of just going, I have to do 70% of it is easy. Look at the quality of what you're doing. Look at your goals. Look at what your goals require. Okay, and we'll talk about that as well. And then go, well, okay, I do need to do easy runs and recovery runs because they're super important, but I need to make sure I get my speed work in as well. I need to get the development work in there as well. Okay. If you're working out an elite level, 160 kilometers a week or 100 miles a week, then that leaves plenty of room, 112 kilometers or 70 miles of easy running, but it gives you a whopping 48 kilometers or 30 miles for all those other types of runs. Then it works. That's when the ratio works. But on the lower end of the scale, I wouldn't, you know, if people are trying to get you to do that and you're not progressing, you're feeling like, you know, you're stuck in this easy zones all the time, you need to kind of look into this and maybe say, well, maybe I'm doing too much easy volume. Maybe I'm not doing enough of the stuff that forces adaptations. Because you've got to remember, you know, if you are not overloading your system, it will never adapt. Okay, so you have to overload intelligently. You have to overload, recover, adapt. If you're always below the level of overload, you're always doing a load you can manage all of the time, there's no adaptation. That's not how the human body works. The human body needs to be challenged, needs to be overloaded appropriately, and then with the recovery for you to be able to adapt. You know, you wouldn't go down to the gym and just lift, you know, a 5-pound weight and think you're going to get bigger muscles, and you do that week in, week out. You've got to progress the weight. Well, running is exactly the same. You have to progress the intensity. And you can't do that just running lots and lots and lots of easy miles. Okay. So let's move on now to types of runs. First one we're going to look at is recovery run. Now, the way I've done these slides is the top part of the slide, we're going to talk about the kind of normal common stuff we would associate with that type of run, the physiological stuff, if you like. And we're going to say that recovery runs is active recovery. So you're still going out for a run, but it's super low intensity. So it's even slower than an easy run. Really, really, really slow, really low intensity. And it's there to help promote blood flow, but without any additional training stress. You quite often see good club runners and elite runners will do a jog after finished a race, even if it's maybe not a marathon, perhaps, but certainly anything less than that. They'll do, you know, a couple of kilometers or a kilometer of a jog, and this is what they're doing, so promoting blood flow. Okay, and they're doing it at a very, very easy pace, so they're not adding to that extra stress. So bottom half is neuros. The neuro benefits of a recovery run is low sensory motor demand. Okay, so we're not challenging your system. I'm going to put a caveat on that, though, because, of course, and I've spoken about this before, there are people who can't coordinate at a slow speed. They find the slow speeds much harder. They might get niggles or pain at slow speeds, or certainly after they've done a very slow run. So you have to be mindful of that. If that's happening with you at a recovery run, you need to be training very slow cerebellar stuff. Okay, so complex movement, motor movement. So you could be doing very slow elbow circles. You could do very slow shoulder circles, but you're doing it holding a torch or something, and you want to be really, really accurate. If you're starting to get any judder, okay, that means you're not getting the right level of motor control. You can't control it. So therefore, you'd have to maybe speed it up a little bit and then come back and slow it down a bit and speed it up and slow it down. Okay. And, you know, it's a serious point because I do know people who are in this position and they get injured because they're running too slow for what they can control. Because if you don't have good ability to do slow motor movements, okay, then you can't coordinate the stability of things like your knees and ankles and feet and hips when you're running slowly. Okay. So in theory, recovery run is very low sensory, very low motor demand, but it also might be a bit of a threat for you. So just take that into account. Okay. But ordinarily, we're downshifting of the autonomic nervous system. So it's that parasympathetic nervous system that's coming in here. We're kind of doing the rest and digest. We're getting your heart rate down. We're getting blood flow going, and we're just getting everything nice and easy. You could also concentrate on breathing while you're doing the recovery runs so that you're adding to that as well. And it's also quite good for consolidation of recent motor learning. So let's just say you've been doing a bunch of drills. And let's just say you've been working on slow coordination drills. This is an ideal run to put that into practice. And it's very good at reinforcing safe priors. Priors being the prior predictive models after a stressful session. So let's say you've raced hard on a Sunday and you're going to do a recovery run on a Monday. What you're saying is the end of that race might have been really unsafe because you're challenging all your systems. You've allowed some recovery and now you're going, okay, running is actually quite safe because now we're in a recovery run. We can bring that back in again. So we're reinforcing that running at slower speeds is safe for us, given the whether you can control your cerebellum at slow speeds or not. Okay, so let's move on to the easy run. So this is the aerobic base building and, you know, should be forming the majority, even if that's a small majority of your running. Okay, and that's because that it promotes capillary density, mitochondrial density and fat utilization. So capillary density, so we're looking at better blood flow through to the working muscles. Okay, so more oxygen, more fuel, and the removal of waste products more effectively. So we're also looking at mitochondrial density. So mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cells. It's the, like the cell within the cell, if you like. And that's responsible for the conversion of the chemicals to the energy itself, the fuel and the oxygen to the energy, the ATP. And when I had long COVID, that's a bit, for me, it damaged, which I used to get the post-exercise malaise a lot. I used to just crash all the time, sometimes during exercise, most of the time after exercise, because I couldn't create energy at a rate that needed to be created, even for easy runs. For me, having that Newport Marathon being so difficult in the end, it seemed to do a whole reset. And actually, I regenerated a lot of my mitochondria. So my mitochondrial density improved and it seemed to have solved the problem, which is great. So that's what easy runs are all about. Okay, you need easy runs in there because they promote these things. They also promote fat utilization. Okay, so you can get better at burning fat as a fuel source by tailoring a little bit how you do your easy runs in terms of fasting or just having slightly less carbohydrate on some of your easy runs. Very difficult to do that if you want to do runs at performance because you need the carbohydrates to do that, but you can help to utilize fat better by using easy runs to be able to do that. From a neuro perspective, we're again building better predictive priors, okay, better predictive models, and we're refining our models. It's a really good way of doing that. So let's just say you've been doing some coordination work and traditionally you find with some of your running that your coordination goes off a little bit. Well, this is a really good way of putting that coordination work into practice in a low intensity environment. And that's what predictive prior building and refinement is all about. We're refining these models. We're saying, because you can do some practice on your easy runs. You know, you can do elbow suckers on your easy runs. You can do coordination work. You can do finger work. Okay, all that kind of stuff. All of that stuff you can do whilst you're doing an easy run. I quite often do not hold my thumb out, but I'll choose a tree and I'll do some VOR work. You know, I can do this kind of work. Yes, you've got to be careful you don't fall over. I've built up to this. I haven't just gone out and done this, but I've built up to it. I started off doing it walking. But so you can actually build some of your neuroactive drills into your runs, and that helps create a safer environment for your brain. You're building better models, okay? And that's all about this refining that systems calibration. So if you've been doing lots of balance work, lots of head work, lots of eye work, okay, you can then go and do an easy run and you can go and put that into practice in an easy run as well. Okay, so it's reinforcing those accurate movement priors. Easy runs are brilliant for doing this. I have always done this throughout ever since I started running. Didn't know that's what I was doing necessarily. Certainly didn't know any of the neuro stuff about around it, but this is what I was doing. I was building better predictive models of every situation because I always did high quality movement. I focused on my cadence, I focused on my foot landings, I focused on my posture, I focused on, you know, relaxation, not holding tension in my neck and all these kind of stuff. If I'd known what I knew now, it would have been a lot quicker because I would have just done the drills for it. It would have helped. But I didn't. But by doing years of this stuff, it's really helped to, you know, allow me to keep on doing it. You know, nearly 55 years old, allow me to still, you know, run reasonably well. And because easy runs are easy runs and there's a little bit of a range there that you can play with, it's a safe environment, it's a safe intensity to build quality movement. And most of us get our feel for running from here. So it's a really good way of going, yeah, I feel really good at an easy run. But as soon as I start to take it up, the effort up a little bit, things go off. Right, okay, so now I need to go practice. I need to push myself a little bit in the easy runs in terms of challenging things like balance. So doing some VORs, that'll challenge your balance as you're running. Okay, slow down the run, do it, get control, do it, and then you can improve that. That'll then help you as you start to improve your intensities of overall stabilization. Okay, so you can use these runs for this sort of stuff. Okay, now we're moving into upper easy or steady run. I never use this phrase steady run. I always use the phrase upper easy run. Now this is at the top end of that your easy effort feel. Okay, so this is probably about six out of ten on a scale. If we were doing a scale of 1 to 10 or 0 to 10, if you're counting not moving, it helps to bridge between base building and threshold. Okay, so we're starting to build that top end aerobic, and we're going slightly more towards this anaerobic bit. We're not doing anaerobic, we're just going where slightly less oxygen is available. So upper easy is good. It's unfortunately, it's quite easy to drift into it if we're not disciplined about our easy runs. And I'm terrible for this. Or maybe not terrible for this, but I do this a lot. I drift into upper easy all the time. I find that I struggle at easy runs. But for me, because I recover very, very quickly. It's one of the things I've learned over my running journey is I recover quickly. So actually, an upper easy run for me is an easy run. And I feel I can do my runs at upper easy and still recover really quickly from it. Okay, I don't really have, other than when I had long COVID, I don't have any particular issues with that. If I'm really tired, I will knock it back to an easy run. But for me, this works for me. Okay, but for a lot of people, it's easy to drift into this upper easy when they're supposed to be doing an easy run. Okay, and then it depending on their volume, depending on what other training they do, it can burn them out, or they can, you know, they can get fatigued much more quickly. So we have to just watch that a little bit. Again, really good for predictive prior refinement and widening, because now we're increasing that easy. So stuff we can do from easy, we're now making it, we're challenging ourselves a little bit in there. So we're creating better predictive models as we do more than your active drills, and we get better at being able to stabilize our joints, get better at the integration between our systems. Okay, that will translate more, and then we test it out on our upper easy runs. So it's great for that system development. It's great for testing whether we're holding that clean output. And it's really good for starting to see where the limits of guarding come in. Because if you're all fine and easy, you start to increase it and you start to get some pain, some niggles or other stuff coming in. You go, okay, my systems are being overloaded. Okay, overloaded as soon as the intensity goes up. So therefore, I need to train that. So one way you could train that is start your easy run up to the point where you start to have an issue. Stop, do some of the neuroactive drills. Okay, so do some of the vestibular drills, do some of the, you know, eye drills, and then go in and do another part of the upper easy run. And so you have a little bit stop start, but you stop, do the drills, get back up to that intensity again. OK, and over time, what you'll find is actually you can go much higher intensity before anything starts to kick in. OK, and that's what the training is. That's the kind of strengthened part in the neuroactive model after we've identified it. And then we've taken some of the noise out of it, and we've cleaned it, we've trained it, we've integrated it, and now we're strengthening it. And this is putting it into a real world environment. So it's really it's anywhere really from the integration and the integration and the training integration and strengthening all in one, really, to say that. I always see this as pushing the envelope. For me, I say this is a type of run I've always done, because I've always found that start easy, push, just before my breathing just gets a little bit, everything feels a little bit hard, then come back to easy again. Push. This is all within the same run. Push, come back a little bit. And I still do that now. I push, come back, push, come back. But the coming back bit needs to be less these days. OK, so it's really good. And I always call it in my head pushing the envelope. Because, again, adaptations only happen when you start to overload your systems. But you've got to have the recovery. So you do some overload, come back. So, again, it's not just the physiology, not just your physical systems, like your muscles and the fibers. We're actually talking about the neurological side of things, your neurological systems, vestibular, proprioceptive, you know, visual system, your cerebellum, pushing the envelope on those as well, challenging them, then coming back off it again, allowing a little recovery, then challenging them. So I think Upper Easy, I think it's a brilliant running, a type of run to do. Long run, again, long run, largely aerobic. Well, it'll nearly always be aerobic because you can't really do anything that isn't aerobic as a long run, although you can work in a threshold a little bit. But it's really good for training fatigue resistance. So the longer you go, particularly as you start to go up higher intensity, but even at lower intensity, the longer you go, you're going to accumulate fatigue. Okay, you're going to accumulate fatigue partly because you have systems failures along the way. Your systems can't handle it, and this is what forces some of that fatigue to come in. You're also going to train and test your ability to utilize your fuel. So glycogen is the stored form of glucose. Okay, and long runs are where you learn how well you're able to adapt to having a depleting fuel source as you go through longer through that run. Okay, same, I would say exactly the same with hydration as well. I find long runs really good for hydration training. Okay, even in this hot weather that we've been having at the moment, I do take water out with me more than I did before, but it's just, for me, it's a small amount because I always train to have less water. Partly because in a race situation, I don't want to be relying on having to drink 500 mils of water over, you know, over a marathon. That, for me, that's an awful lot. I couldn't get anywhere near that. So, you know, I just train that. But from a fueling perspective as well, again, you're utilizing fat as a fuel source, but also glucose as well. And it depends what you want. If you're going on a long run that's very easy, you can use it for fat utilization. If you want to go on a long run where you're challenging yourself, you may be doing some marathon pace bits in there, maybe doing some thresholdy bits in there, then you probably want to make sure you're actually well fueled for that. Otherwise, you're going to be disappointed with your performance. Performance needs fuel and it needs carbohydrate, okay? Because the fat utilization is not quick enough to be able to do it. There are some exceptions, but as a general rule. And what's becoming more in vogue at the moment is that, you know, if you're working at high intensity, you need 100 to 120 grams of carbohydrate per hour. That's a lot to consume. Most recreational runners probably don't need that. But certainly you probably need more carbohydrate than I think most of us are using if you're putting any form of intensity into your longer runs. And I've started doing this myself and I noticed a massive difference in my performance. And those times like, you know, the run I did, the marathon training session that I did actually this morning wasn't that great. And that's because I hadn't fueled as well as I could have done before I did it. Okay, compared to when I've done it previously. Also, long runs encourages musculoskeletal durability, okay, endurance of musculoskeletal development. And it trains the mental side of time on feet, and which is really, really important. So we're getting some psychological training there as well, okay, particularly if you're doing that at higher intensities as well. Okay, so you're getting this mental side coming in where you're having to push yourself. Okay, this comes in some of the other run types as well. But if you're on a long run and you're getting tired, it's hot, you know, you're starting to flag a little bit, you've got to pull yourself up. And that's really valuable when you come into a race situation. Okay. So from a neuro perspective, well, it's really good systems training. It's almost perfect expression under load testing and training. Okay, so the longer we go, the more our systems start to fail because they don't have the endurance. And this is where you can train them. So you go on a long run. Let's just say it's an easy long run. So your goal is to finish. Let's just say, I don't know, everyone's long run is going to be different because it depends what you're training for. But let's just say we're going for a 15-mile run. So that'll be about a 25K run, somewhere around about that. Now, if you're not doing it for pace, you're just doing it to get the distance done and doing it as a training run. So pace is not important. Then as you start to flag, as you start, your system starts to degrade slightly, stop. Do some neuroactive drills. Okay, do some cerebellar drills, do some visual drills, do some standing on one leg drills. Okay, challenge yourself a little bit, then start your long run again. Okay, so now what you're doing is you're then forcing your systems to work when you're already fatigued. And this is brilliant training. Okay, might take, you know, a few weeks of doing this before you notice a difference, but then suddenly you'll go, well, actually, I can go further now without fatiguing as much. Really valuable. Long runs are really, really good for this type of training. Okay, I've been doing a lot more of that in the last you know, last few long runs that I've been doing over the last few years is to kind of add that in. Because it's a real test. Can your systems hold up under fatigue conditions? Okay, that's the big one. This is why we do a lot of the neuroactive training drills, because we want this to be the outcome. But you have to put it in a running context as well. Okay, you can't just do it outside of running and hope that it's going to hit you when you're running. You have to do it. Brain endurance training, the BET stuff, that's what this is all designed about. And I need to review that in the membership to make sure that we're covering bases in there, because I know I started with that. Some people were using it, some people weren't. So I need to just make sure everyone can have access to that as well. But that's what that's all about, is fatigue training. Okay, but really, we want to do that on our phone, you know, 12 miles into a 15 mile run, and we do some brain endurance training stuff to really help fatigue us out, and then we finish that run, we're getting some mental side of stuff done, but we're getting some neuroadaptations as well. And that's because obviously fatigue accumulates, and as it does so, your signal quality degrades. Okay, so now we move on to tempo run. Tempo run, this kind of anomaly. Really, tempo just means pace. The word tempo means pace or speed. So it's always going to be relative to your goal. If you're running a 5K, if you're, you know, racing, if you're training for a 5K, your tempo run's going to be faster than if you're training for a marathon. Okay, it's pretty much always going to be up there in that upper aerobic zone, but it is slightly different depending on what it is you're training for. Okay, often it's seen as a run that's about 7 out of 10 effort, about an effort you can hold for about an hour. Okay, see, I would even say that's threshold, and that's why I kind of don't really use tempo as a phrase very much. I would use threshold, because for me a tempo run's a threshold run, because you're training that upper aerobic lower threshold, okay, across there. That's what I see it as more often, but I wanted to include it because it's one of the, it's a run that's commonly it's a term that's commonly used, but this is kind of where most people would see it as being. Okay, seeing it as being just sub threshold, but it's that kind of top end. But if it's an effort you can race for about an hour, I would argue you're going threshold. It's aimed at training aerobic efficiency and running economy at faster paces. Okay, so how's your breathing? How's your lactate buffering and recycling? How are you coping physiologically at that effort? And from a neuro perspective, we're now having to deal with increased noise in the system, increased breathing, increased effort, increased fatigue. Okay, our systems are starting to fail a little bit just because of that effort's a little bit higher. The integration might be going off a little bit. So we have to look at how well we can hold that stable output. Okay, how is your coordination at that type of intensity? And also, you know, it's about the integration, as just mentioned, higher load, widening the range where a hard effort still, you know, can feel safe. So we've done an easy run, you're good at easy, we've trained it so your upper easy is now pretty good. Now we're taking it up to the next level, and we need to then utilize our neuroactive drills so we can widen it. So this is all about brain safety, predictive model production or refinement, so that we are getting you feeling safe as a runner as you go through. So it's far beyond just the physiological reasons of why we want to do a tempo run. It's all about that systems integration and that systems development. Then we move to threshold run, primarily aerobic, same as a tempo run, but it's also some anaerobic. Okay, so we're dipping in and out of that anaerobic. So we're in that threshold zone, either just crossing over from aerobic into threshold, which of course is still aerobic. And then sometimes we dip into that lactic or anaerobic system, but not always. I call it the threshold transition zone. I think that's my own phrase. I've used that for years and years and years. I don't know if anybody else calls it that. You might hear threshold zone, but I like the idea of it transitioning from aerobic to anaerobic, because most of that transition zone is still aerobic. Okay, but it's a really important zone because it's training lactate tolerance, recycling, buffering, and clearance. Okay, so as you start to move towards more anaerobic, lactate builds up. So you need to train your tolerance to that build up, because as it builds up, it's starting to create that acidic environment, and that's going to force your internal, your interoception, to start to slow you down, because it's making a prediction about the fact that it's going to become unsafe. Okay, and then we add our own interpretation to that is like, oh, my chest might explode or whatever it might be if I keep this effort up. Okay, so we're building up a tolerance to that lactate. So a little bit like breathing, when carbon dioxide builds up, that makes you want to breathe. So we also want to have a tolerance to carbon dioxide in the same way we want to have a tolerance to build up of lactate. Okay, part of that is getting better at recycling some of it and using it as a fuel. You can't use all of it as a fuel, but you can use some of it as a fuel. Okay, and so training in the threshold zone is really good for doing that. Also buffering. So buffering, tolerance, recycling kind of all go together. So we can buffer as pretty much part of the tolerance aspect of it, and then we recycle and use some of it. And then clearance is the remainder of it. So how well can we clear that lactate, those hydrogen ions as well? You know, the other waste products from the cell, even though we're training at an intensity. Okay, and this is where threshold training, I think, is amazing. I think it's one of the key training sessions for most runners, but they avoid it. They avoid it because it's uncomfortable. You know, and it is uncomfortable. You can't get away from that. And that's one of the big neuro benefits, because it sits at that edge of protection. You know, doing a 5 minute, proper 5 minute threshold. And I put these into the Vovid Runner sessions, but I notice a lot of people run them at upper easy. They don't run them at threshold. It should be hard. It should be 7 to 8 out of 10, or 7.5 out of 10. I always put them at 7 out of 10. But really, they should be uncomfortable by the time you get to the end of that 5 minutes. It should be. You know, I've just done my session this morning was 12 minutes, 5 times 2 minutes, 12 minutes. That first 12 minutes is threshold. It's uncomfortable. It's not very nice when you get to about 8 minutes and you know you've still got another 4 minutes to go. But it's really good at training the mental side, but also the physiological side of lactate tolerance, recycling, buffering, clearing. But it's also good at building this model that it's okay and it's safe to run for a long time at that effort level. Okay, so we're amending our effort perception. So after doing a few runs of this, our effort perception is the 7 out of 10 at that pace. Now it's a higher pace for 7 out of 10. The pace we were doing before, now that might feel like a 6.5 out of 10. Okay, so therefore we're also, you know, managing a drop in pace. When it gets really, really difficult, I mean, we think, oh, God, I just cannot do this anymore. This is where you need to dig deep. Okay, even if you drop it off slightly, okay, get back into control again and then take it back up again. So that pace drop might only be temporary. And that's okay to do that. That's part of the training. Okay. And so it's predictive model development because it's direct exposure therapy to discomfort. It isn't very nice to do sometimes. But I believe it's essential. I believe you widen that threshold zone, you pull your aerobic zone up, and then also training in the alactic and the lactic zones, you're pulling everything up. It just makes, this is what makes you run faster. Okay, same pace, less effort, or for the same effort, more pace. Okay, this is what every runner who wants to have any form of element of performance, whether that's just improving your park run by 5 or 6 seconds, or you want to, you know, really improve in terms of your speed, this is what you need to be doing. Okay, this is a key session that people do not run at the right intensity. And we can use threshold runs to kind of teach your system the internal signal isn't a threat. Okay, so building that model, it's okay, it's safe. It might not be very nice, but I'm not going to explode because of it. I'm not going to blow up because it's hard. I can just take my foot off the pace a little bit and slow it down and then regain that. It's okay. If you get pains and niggles, this is where you want to take it down, do some, or even stop. Cut that interval short a little bit. Do some drills, get back to it. And if I'm really having a bad time and I can't get the pace, the effort's too high, I'll stop. I'll get my head together, I'll do some drills, and then I'll continue. Because there's no point just battling through. That can have some mental... It can have some mental advantages as well, but depending on how you are built yourself with your interception, it can also backfire on you. So I always think it's better initially anyway, to kind of take it down or stop, get yourself together and then take it back up again. Okay, because you're training. That is what you're training. You're training the predictive models all the time. You just got to remember everything you do, you're training a predictive model. So you've got to do it deliberately for a better model, a more helpful model. Okay, if you do this and you're failing all the time, failing by mean you're not staying within that threshold zone, you go, oh, it's too hard, you're into a 5 minute section, it's too hard at 2 minutes, and you drop it back to an easy, Okay, I'm not talking about failure in that kind of sense, but what you've kind of failed to meet the training demand. Okay, you're playing into a predictive model that says, oh, after 2 minutes of threshold, I can't do anymore. Okay, so you build. You've got to just remember everything you do is about prediction, about building predictive models for future sessions. Okay, it's a little bit like when I met this morning on dog walk, and she talking about the lack of rain, and she's and hose pipe bands, and she says, you know, some of my flowers I have to water. She uses a watering can to you know, economize on her water usage. But she was saying, if I don't water some of my flowers now, they will not flower in September. So she has to do it now for them flowering September. This is the same thing. Okay, you have to build the models here now so that when you're in a race situation, your system knows how to handle it. Okay, this is all about building these predictive models, okay? And threshold is a really good way of doing that. And it will increase your threshold then. Okay, so we have race pace or marathon pace run here. I've put them together because the outcome is kind of the same. It's a specific race pace practice. I often do them as part of a longer run or as a kind of different type of session. An example of that might be, let's just say you're doing a 5K race, so you're training for 5K, you're doing a race pace of 5K, you're not going to go out and do 5K at race pace, or you might do, but then you'll be doing the race. What you might do though is you might do 5 minutes easy, 2 minutes race pace. 5 minutes easy, 2 minutes race pace. Or you might do 5 minutes easy, 3 minutes race pace. You know, you would, without any recoveries in between. So you're going from an easy pace, and that might be, you know, you might be just a very easy pace, or it might be a half marathon pace if you want to challenge yourself a little bit more in terms of reducing your recovery ability. Okay, but having some race pace in there, marathon for me, that's an easy one because a lot of that thresholdy stuff is all that. So session this morning, 12 minutes 5 times 2, 12 minutes, I did them at a higher threshold pace, but as my marathon speed sessions change, I might be doing 24 minutes at marathon pace, then followed by a 2 or 3 minute recovery, then into an 18 minutes, slightly faster than the 24, into a 12, slightly faster than the 18, and then you go 9, 6, 3, 2, each slightly faster. Okay, so building it in, but that's got some walking recoveries in between. So you can do these in lots of different ways, but they're really, really important because we're calibrating your systems to work at that intensity. And it's all right to stick recoveries in there. You know, if you're doing 5K training or 10K training, do a block 2 minutes at that race pace. Then take a 3 minute recovery. Okay? Because it's not about the recovery, it's about how you're performing in that 2 minute block. Okay? A lot of people get caught up with, how does this look on Strava? Oh, it looks like I'm having lots of recovery on Strava. Forget Strava, forget, you know, Garmin Connect, forget all these platforms you put it on. What's your running? And for you to get 2 minutes of solid effort at race pace with a recovery and then repeat that 5 times, 8 times, 10 times, that's really, really solid work. And it's calibrating all your systems as well, your coordination, the integration between all your systems. Okay, but it's a short enough block that if things start to fall apart, you've got a recovery afterwards. And then over time, you progress that. So instead of doing 2 minutes, you do 2.5 minutes. And then the next month, you might do that as a 3 minute. Okay? Because it's all about predictive model development. And I know I'm keeping on banging on about this, but I need to get the message across that everything we do is building predictive models. So we want to do it deliberately. Okay? We want to build good predictive models. So when you turn up on race day, that target pace and that target effort is already known about. There's no surprises to your system. And you see this all the time, particularly with marathons, but it happens at all distances, but particularly with marathons, people train at a certain marathon pace. So they do 12 weeks or 16 weeks training, and their target marathon pace, let's just say, is just over an 8 minute mile. Let's just say it's a 5:15 minute kilometer pace. That would give you just under 3:30. 3 hours 30, roughly, about marathon, I think. So you train at that. But then when you go to do the marathon, you run out at 7:50s, minute kilometre pace, instead of 8:15s. Or you run at 7:45s. okay? And you can adjust that to your own. And I'm pretty sure you've all had this experience. You train for a pace. It's known. You have a good predictive model about that because you can do all of that. You can do your long runs at your easy pace, bits and pieces in at marathon pace. But then on race day, for some reason, you think you're superhuman and the same rules don't apply. But they do. And that's why people come unstuck. Okay. This is why doing lots of stuff at marathon pace or race pace is really important, because it becomes known. But you also know you have confidence at that pace, you know. So there's no point going out at, say, a 3:30 marathon pace or a 4 hour or a 4.5 hour marathon pace. You know, if you just say 4.5 hours. So you've trained for 4.5 hours, but you then try and run at a 4 hour marathon pace on race day. Doesn't make any sense. OK. And that's exactly what just about modulating predictive errors on race day. OK, so let's move on to hills. Hills are a really interesting one because they can be part of speed work, but they can be part of easy runs, long runs, etc. as well. Whichever variety you use, they're really good for neuromuscular activation. Okay, you can use them for uphill, downhill. They have different impacts and different effects depending on what you're doing. Okay, really good for musculoskeletal development as well, but they can also be low impact, depends on how you run them. Really good for power generation, particularly, you know, when you're going uphills, and you can have lots of different gradients, and that would train how you develop power depending on the gradient as well. A lot of people use them for VO2 max training, that really high, that point where we're switching over into anaerobic, because it's quite easy to do. If you find a pretty steep hill, it will probably only take you 15 seconds to get up to that energy system. Really good, relatively low impact from that perspective in terms of volume. So it can be a really good way of training that. But also you can do lots of long hills, and that's a very different, that's you going through aerobic into threshold type stuff as well. Okay, as I said, it's slightly lower impact than some other speed work can be. Mainly, it depends on how you design the system, how you design the session, but mainly because you can get up into those energy systems much more quickly. From a neuro perspective, they're brilliant. Really good for vestibular and proprioceptive training, okay, because of the gradients, your visual system, vestibular system, and your proprioceptive system through your joints and system, mainly through your ankles and your feet and things like your calves, is you've got to orient where you are, so orientate where you are on that particular gradient. So it's really good for training that type of stuff. If you struggle going uphill, you struggle going downhill, then you can train it by varying the gradient for it, okay? So if you struggle coming downhill, do a shallower gradient, but run slightly harder. Work up to running harder. Then take it easier, but increase the gradient. Okay, because you're training all these systems throughout it. If you want to do it outside of running, find a slant board. Stand on a slant board so that you've got the same proprioception in your ankle, same joint sense in your ankle, you know, standing up forwards, and then do some vestibular work. Okay, do some eye work. Do some lots of types of just different vestibular work. Do some cerebellar work. These are just all the standard, really simple drills to do, but you're challenging it because you're basically on a hill. Or stand on a hill. I had to do this with some of my coming out of the long COVID side of things. I would stand on a hill and I would do a bunch of drills before I went and ran that hill, because my hill running really dropped off. And it's partly, I think, because long COVID has had an impact on my vestibular system, on my inner ear canals and stuff. And, my dizziness is worse than it's ever was before. Always had it slightly due to low sodium. But training on hills has really helped, and it's a lot better than it was. Still not where I want it to be, but it's a lot better. Hill running also forces new coordination solutions on the fly, because, you know, the gradient, even on a fairly, unless you're on a treadmill, the gradient's never going to stay exactly the same. It's going to change. You have to balance in different ways. You have to coordinate your joints in different ways. Okay. And depending on how you run that session, also the terrain you're on can challenge how you coordinate. And your brain's got to come up with this all the time. So it's really good training for that. Okay. Encourages higher motor drive, particularly when you're running up on the uphill. On the downhill, it can train confidence because you don't want to be braking, because it loads the quads a lot more. So, you know, you've got to look at, but I think downhill training is an absolute must for people, absolute must. And of course, it gives you that exposure to handling a higher load. So now we move on to speed work intervals, and this says VO2 max. If I can move this, but it might not. There we go. Speed work intervals, VO2 max. And now this particular, I don't really distinguish, I'm going to say, because we talk about repetitions in a minute. I don't distinguish between intervals and repetitions particularly, because what I'm looking at is start off with energy systems. And then what is being trained by, you know, what do I want to train? And I just use a run for that energy system. OK, so I'm not necessarily putting these labels on it the way that you might see in a magazine or online. But what we're talking about here is intervals that are taking you up to that upper limit of that threshold zone. So these are typically 3 to 5 minute efforts at 95 to 100% max heart rate. Again, I don't really use heart rate. I don't find heart rate an accurate measure. I think as a benchmark to look at it over a period of time and see how it changes is great. I think it's great if you want to figure out your internal state. So, you know, if you're feeling a bit under the weather, you're tired, then your heart rate can be a little bit higher. If you're not feeling well, your heart rate can be a little bit higher. But there's a lag in real time running. You know, there's a 3 to 5 second lag of your heart rate behind you. So using it in real time heart rate, I don't find it useful. I tend to use perceived effort, that scale of 0 to 10, or I know now through my experience what my paces are pretty much, but I also use a power meter. So I can see through my power meter. Again, you know, it's an algorithm, so it's never going to be that accurate, but I know after having used these things for a while where it's likely to be. Okay, but we're talking about here 3 to 5 minute efforts. They're high efforts, so 95 to 100% of maximum heart rate. You're putting a lot of effort into that 3 to 5 minutes. Okay, so we're now targeting maximal aerobic capacity right at the top of that threshold zone. Trains oxygen usage, and this also helps in terms of rapid state shifting from a neuro perspective. Okay, so you think about oxygen usage training, you're ramping it up, you're having a recovery, you're ramping it up, having a recovery. So you're having to use, you're stressing your system out, getting oxygen there, and then you have your recoveries down. And then depending on how you structure your recoveries will depend on how recovered you are before you start your next one. And that you can use that recovery time very much to tailor how you're using that effort. Okay. So from a neuro perspective, that rapid state shifting is ramping up your sympathetic nervous system. So ramping up your breathing, ramping up your heart rate, ramping up the kind of blood flow and the stress levels. And that's sympathetic nervous system drive. And then in your recoveries, you're down regulating it. So you're encouraging a parasympathetic, I should say, your nervous system in the recoveries. OK, I should say parasympathetic. So you're down regulating in the recoveries. So effort, recovery, effort, recovery, effort, recovery, effort, recovery. OK, so sympathetic, parasympathetic. OK, so you're training your system to switch between the two. And again, that's really good in a race situation or a situation where you're going to be under stress, because it's now more predictable for your brain. We're also dealing with a much higher output in terms of sensory noise as well. So higher breathing, higher heart rate, all this stuff is going on. Higher demand for you to coordinate, higher demand for to stabilize your joints. All your systems are under much, much higher demand, and the integration of those systems as well are under much, much higher demand. OK, so this speed work is really, really good for that. So these are the slightly longer intervals, sort of medium to longer intervals that you would do at that level. You can't really do many of these intervals at a higher rate than that. And I would say quite often this would be less, be 1 to 2 to maybe up to 3 minute intervals if you're really going to train in that upper threshold zone, dipping into that anaerobic zone. So the next type of speed work, normally known as repetitions, I kind of lump the two together, say, and I just work out what do I need. If I want anaerobic, I'll choose these shorter, higher intensity intervals. So these tend to be 200s, 400s and 800s. You can chuck 100s in there as well for recreational runners, because although they are a sprint, for most recreational runners, we can't actually ever get to maximum output over that distance. Again, these are really, really good for neuromuscular power development. Okay, because we're having to try and put as much force into each step as possible. So our power to efficiency ratio is much more based on the power side of things. When you're doing easy runs and you're doing long runs and even a lot of marathon running, you actually want your efficiency to be higher than the power. So less power per step, because we want to conserve energy. But when you're doing lots of high intensity speed work, the ratio is the other way around. More power per step because we're not worried about our energy system. We're not worried about, you know, keeping on going for a long time. Okay, we want to have as much power down to develop the neuromuscular system, to develop the fibers themselves, to develop the fascial systems and all of that. Then we need as much power down as we can get. So we're targeting maximal aerobic capacity and we're targeting anaerobic capacity here. So we're in that lactic system now, okay, with these shorter intervals. We can also add sprints in there to target the alactic system. But these sprints really need to be maximum output. So if you're looking at doing a 100 meter sprint, but let's say you're doing 100 meters in 14 seconds or 15 seconds or slower, you're not maximal output. For you, that's not maximal output because you're in that alactic system. For you, it's probably only 6, maybe 7 seconds. So now maybe you need to do a 30 meter sprint or a 50 meter sprint, okay, to make sure you, and then have a 3 or 5 minute recovery after it. It may seem, a bit of a waste of a day to do that. But actually what you're doing is you're pulling up all the systems. So 30 meter sprints or 50 meter sprints, but they're absolute maximum capacity sprints. Then you take a decent recovery, then you do again. Okay, so this style of training became really popular in normal fitness training, where you do some kind of, it was normally done on a spin bike or something, we do high intensity effort for a few seconds and then you have a long recovery. Few seconds and a long run. Can't really remember the name of it. Come up with the name. It was a form of high intensity interval training, but it was a very specific one where it's maximum output, lots of recovery, maximum output, lots of recovery, maximum. It was like low reps, maybe 7 or 8 reps, but each one of those reps had lots of recovery and huge, intensity, trying to get that 10 out of 10. Okay, so there's no point doing sprints to train that alactic system if you're not in that alactic system. Okay, there's just no point. So when you're doing your sprints, if that's a maximum output sprint, this is a maximum output sprint, might only be 7 seconds for you, it might only be 30 meters, and that's absolutely fine. So from a neuro perspective, this is training and testing the coordination and motor drive at that really, really high output level. Okay, you're training your fast twitch muscle fibers in there, and anyone who's good at sprinting will probably have a higher proportion of that. Anyone who's maybe not so good at sprinting might have a higher proportion of the slow twitch fibers, which are more endurance based. I happen to be 50-50 according to some DNA tests, so that's why I've never been that great at 5k or 10k, because I don't have enough of those fast twitch fibers to really maximize on that. I'm pretty good at half marathon and marathon, and that sits in that sweet spot. I don't know what it'd be like at ultra. The baby ultras that I've done really well at, but longer stuff, harder stuff, I don't know, maybe I don't have enough endurance fibers for that. But certainly my sweet spot over my own running journey has been kind of half marathon distances. Even 10 miles is probably a little bit on the far side for me to do really well at that. I don't have enough fast twitch fibers for that. Okay, but this is what we're training in this speed work here. And we're also doing intermuscular sequencing at speed. Okay, so we're basically getting the muscles to contract and relax and contract and relax, and stretch, contract very, very fast, and then across our muscles as well. Of course, we're building predictive models and predictive priors at that speed and that intensity. Okay, so this is why in some of the Vogue Runner sessions that I've taken, if we're doing certain sprints, we might do some neuroactive drills in the recoveries. That depends on that just depends on the session. When I used to take them, used to do that quite a lot, do it slightly less now. I do it in my own sessions. So I go out, even today's session where I did the 5x2 minutes in between the 2 12s, is in the recoveries, I had a 2 minute recovery between each of those 2 minute efforts. And that's because I wanted to run at that threshold effort and not drop down into lower aerobic effort. I would do some drills. I was doing some wide head cigars, for example, because for me, I know that resets things. I do that walking backwards. I do it walking forwards. So I do these in my recovery. And we're really asking the question of our systems. Can high quality movement be maintained at that speed and at that intensity? And can our systems integration and indeed our systems integrity be maintained as well? Okay. Getting there. And I was kind of a bit throwing it at you. But in the next one, next live call, we're going to take some of these apart a little bit and look at them in a way of helping you structure these so you can get the best out of them. Today, I just kind of wanted to go through what they were and then some of the benefits of them. Some of these we can kind of lump together as well. So Farklets, Swedish word for speed play. And these tend to be unstructured speed play. So unlike other forms of speed work where you're going 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever it might be, or distance, 200s, 400s, 800s, kilometers, mile, repeats, we're not doing that. We're going out and we're just having a bit of fun with it. We might go lamppost to lamppost, or we might go from this tree to that bin, or whatever it might be. Okay, so we're varying the pace by feel rather than by numbers. So we might start an effort, and we keep holding that effort as long as we can. We might push it a little bit further, then we just stop, and then we just have a recovery. And we're varying the recoveries as well by distance. Okay, I often use this for form practice. So I'll go, okay, between this tree and that tree, I'm actually going to have high cycling heels, or I'm going to have a better posture, you know, a more relaxed posture, more upright posture, more coming up through my head posture, whatever it might be, arm swing. So you can use, I use Farklets for that as well. I also use Farklets for easy pace progressions. So I might start, start the effort, start at an easy pace. Every bin I go past or every tree I go past, I'll put it up. Put the effort up, keep it up, and then stop. Great to do in a small group, because one person, you're jogging along easy in your recovery, one person says, right, we're going to start that tree, or they might just go, now, and you'll have to start, and you have to keep going, and it's somebody else's job to say, stop. So as a group, you'll probably work out what the intensity is, but because you don't know what it is, you're helping to teach unpredictability and threat modulation. Okay, so we're saying that unpredictability is actually safe in a running environment. Okay, so that's that. Doing it in a group is brilliant. One person shouts now to go, another person shouts stop when it's time to stop, and you just take it in turns to do that. As it can be a really good session to do. Okay, so for each run type, we can pretty much categorize the benefits. Okay. You can have adaptations in terms of physiology, okay, so muscles, fascia, bone density, all this kind of stuff, all the physical adaptations that you make. Then you're going to have neurological adaptations as well, okay. So particularly if you're using your neuroactive drills, you're going to get improved integration between visual, vestibular, proprioceptive, cerebellum, okay. Better coordination, better joint stability. Better ability to use your muscles, less tension, more flow. Okay, then you can have the psychological benefits. So that mental practice of pushing yourself hard, not stopping when it gets tough, for example, unless you really need to, but then you stop, sort yourself out, keep going again. Okay, so you're getting those psychological things. You're building these predictive models across all of these three areas that helps you to run better. Okay, so why have we stopped here? Okay, why that wasn't working, but so we're going to use each run type. So I want you to have a just think about that now. Where would you use each run type? For what goals would you use each run type? Again, you can pause the video or pause the audio and just have a little think about that. What benefits do each? Now you've gone through all of these. You know what they are. How would you use them in your weekly rotation, your weekly volume, your monthly rotation? I would always say backwards plan. Now, I've been talking about backwards planning for a number of years, loads of years, actually. Start with your goal. Okay, so if you're training for a 5K, if you're training for a 10K, you just want to improve your park run time, whatever it might be, marathon, ultra marathon, start with your goal. What does your goal require physiologically? Okay, does it require muscular endurance? Does it require a stiffer spring? Does it require explosive stuff? So let's just say you're training to get your park run time down. Okay, so park run is going to be in that threshold zone, the upper threshold zone for a lot of the time. If you're working really hard, you need to have a stiffer spring. Okay, so your muscles need to be able to handle the forces that you're putting through it. Physiologically, you need to be able to express that power and that strength there. Okay, you need to be able to work in that threshold zone. So straight away, that's telling you, well, you need some form of high-end speed work and you need threshold training. Okay, you need to work in that. You need those. You always need easy runs or recovery runs because you need to have that recovery time for the adaptations to happen. Okay. As I always used to say, the magic happens in the recovery. The adaptations happen in recovery. Okay, whether that's recovery runs or whether that's sleep or rest or whatever it might be. Okay, but you need the easy runs there as well. But quite clearly, if you're going for something like a 5, you need to be higher end and you need to be doing that. It's no point thinking that you're going to improve your park run time by just doing more volume of easy runs. Okay, you might get there just through some muscular adaptations, but it's going to be a very slow, long way round of doing that. Okay, what does it require? What does your goal require neurologically? Okay, so from a systems perspective, what does it require? Well, if you're trying to run a hard 5K, hard relative to whoever we are, but running a 5K puts more demand on your systems, more demand on your vestibular system. So if you cannot do a VOR at the rate that you need to cleanly, and I would say stick a bit of paper on the wall and start to read the letters as you're doing this. And if you cannot do that at a rate that ties in with what you need to do from a speed perspective, then that's the type of training you need to do, because that's the demand that's going to be on your system. Okay, if you get pains and niggles when you put the intensity up, you've probably not got the ability to stabilize your joints properly. So go back and do that vestibular work, the eye work and the proprioceptive work, okay, that you'll find in the membership. Okay, so you need to be looking at all of that. What does your goal require? And then you can fit the runs in. So we know that as you do some of those neuroactive drills, then you're going to put it into practice in an easy run, in an upper easy run, in a tempo run, or threshold run. You could put it into practice in short sprints, slightly longer efforts, but you take, you know, long 3 to 5 minute efforts, but maybe not as high a demand. Okay, so you're able to observe what's going on with your coordination. And of course, race pace. Very important. You need to have race pace no matter what it is you're doing, because that's going to train across all these systems. So this is all about finding out where is your gap, yeah? And then working out what runs can help bridge that gap for you. If we go back to our energy systems again, I always start with energy systems because for me, I think it's one of the easiest ways of starting your training. So we've got our energy systems here and we say, okay, I want to get my park run time down. I know I need to be in this zone here, and I know I need to be up in this zone here. I probably need to be doing some of this because it helps pull it up. I've always got my easy runs in here. So what run types do you say you run 4 times a week? What type of runs are you going to put in there? Well, you need a couple of easy runs. You might have a recovery run, maybe, but you certainly need a couple of easy runs. Your long run can be, but your long run might be one of your easy runs. Okay, remember that percentage, so you can combine these. But you definitely need some form of threshold run in there as well. Okay, upper easy is quite nice to do because you can just push it a little bit up there. But you definitely need some threshold running in there because that's the zone that you're going to be working in. Okay, and your race pace might be a threshold run. Okay, and you definitely need speed work across there. And there's no point just doing aerobic work and just doing sprints. You have to be doing work down here as well. Okay, I think over all distances, to be honest, even for marathon training, obviously even for ultra marathon training, you need to be doing all the way across here because they have different benefits as we've just seen. So I would start with what your goals, okay? What energy system do you think you need to be in? What types of runs satisfy those or train across those? And then look at some of the other things. Let me just take these off for a minute. We look at these other things of, you know, what do you require physiologically? What do you require neurologically? Where's your gap? Get the runs to fill that gap, okay? So, thank you for watching, for listening to this replay. Next time, we'll be taking apart some of those runs and we'll be looking at how you can structure those runs to achieve your running goals, both from a physiological perspective, perhaps from a psychological perspective, it's less my area, but certainly from a neurological perspective, a systems training perspective as well. So you can say, okay, let's look at threshold run. How is that going to help me? What do I need to run a threshold run well? How can I use a threshold run to help me with my neuroactive training as well? Look forward to joining me next time, hopefully. any questions with us at all, please send them in to me or put them on the Facebook group. Let's have a discussion about it. Let's kind of get you moving forward with your running. There you have it. Thanks again. Cheers.